The Honorable Elliot Richardson, Undersecretary of State, here are the issues. Will massive protests force a change in American policy in Southeast Asia? Will American troops fight to save the capital of Cambodia from falling to the communist side? What will President Nixon do to counter Russia's move in sending combat pilots into the Middle East? From Washington, D.C., the American Broadcasting Company brings you the award-winning interview program, Issues and Answers. Our guest, Undersecretary of State Elliot Richardson, will be interviewed by ABC News commentator Joseph C. Harsh and ABC News State Department correspondent John Scali.
Mr. Richardson, welcome to Issues and Answers.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have the opportunity to talk with you and Mr. Harsh on these very important questions.
Secretary, now that many thousands of protesters have demonstrated here in the Capitol against the administration policy on Vietnam, what do you think Hanoi's reaction will be? Do you think that perhaps the leaders in Hanoi will see this as a sign that regardless of how successful we are in Cambodia, that the president's support here at home is crumbling, and so that all they have to do is sit back and wait and win the battle for Vietnam here at home?
Well, I think they have good reason to pursue a course which, same time, leaves open a possible door to a negotiated settlement. Certainly, it is still the objective of the administration to bring out forces from Vietnam sooner than we could under the Vietnamization program, under an agreed timetable for withdrawal. And of course, we hope that the effect of seizing ammunition stored in the Cambodian sanctuaries will create an additional incentive to them to negotiate.
But don't you think that on the other side of that coin, the fact that there has been such an uproar here at home may negate whatever military advantages are involved in the Cambodian operation? Because Hanoi sees evidence of additional dissent, perhaps even revived dissent, the kind that may diminish rather than increase the president's support.
Well, of course, they've been aware for a long time of the existence of dissent, and we have seen, certainly in the last week or more, a new expression of it, perhaps in some ways an even stronger expression of it. But at the same time, as the president made clear in his own news interview on Friday evening, the administration's objectives are essentially the objectives of the dissenters also. And so what we have essentially is a disagreement over methods and over the judgment exercised by the president as commander-in-chief in how best to pursue these objectives.
Mr. Secretary, the purpose of the bombing of North Vietnam was the same as the motive behind it was the motive behind the protesters. It was to get these people to the conference table and win the war. But it proved to be counterproductive. Is there any earthly reason to think that invading Cambodia will be any more successful than bombing North Vietnam and persuading other people to talk peace?
Well, these are, of course, operations which have as their primary objective to destroy a communications and logistic base in Cambodia. And measured by these objectives, the operations are, so far as we can judge up to now, successful.
But there's no evidence that it's brought them closer to the conference table.
We have no
pulling away from it.
We have no concrete evidence of this, of course, at this point. But at the same time, however, we do have a history of 18 months in which they have maintained a very hard and very intransigent line in Paris. Mm-hmm. And so it would appear on the basis of this record that our de-escalation of the war to date, our withdrawal of forces, our scaling down of B-52 sorties, a reduction in the volume of combat activity has not brought them to the point of serious negotiation. So we at least have the hope that to weaken their logistical base will give them an inducement that they've not had up to now.
Mr. Secretary, Robert Finch, the Secretary for Health, Education, and Welfare, was quoted yesterday as saying that all the key leaders involved in the Cambodia decision were surprised at the degree and the depth of opposition that was provoked here at home, even though they expected some adverse reaction. Yet Mr. Nixon said at his news conference Friday night that he wasn't surprised. Were you?
Well, I think, speaking for myself, the degree of the reaction has been more intense than I personally expected. Certainly, the president did give this very prayerful consideration, and I'm sure that his judgment was that although this would be a serious immediate cost, that nonetheless, insofar as it would further the objective of reinsuring the withdrawal of our forces and enhance the effectiveness of the Vietnamization process, that it was a cost which, looked at 6 weeks from now or 6 months from now, would have been worth paying.
Mr. Secretary, it's been reported that you had yourself great misgivings about the wisdom of sending American troops into Cambodia. What was the feature of the operation that disturbed you, and to what extent, if any, have your misgivings been removed?
Well, I, in this instance, have felt from the beginning that the operations do have the potential for a very significant military advantage, that they may serve to increase the incentives to the other side to negotiate. My only concerns have been with respect to possible wider repercussions, but I have always supported these decisions. My own misgivings were misgivings of the kind which were certainly recognized and weighed by all those who had any part in advising the president, and they were fully taken into account. And so I do not regard myself as having been an opponent of the decisions that were taken. In fact, I support the president and believe that the judgment he exercised will prove to have furthered the objectives that he felt that these operations.
Did you actually get your misgivings expressed directly to the president? I'm interested in the process.
My role in this has been only within the Department of State. Secretary of State has been, of course, in direct communication with
Well, Secretary Rogers shared your misgivings about the use of American troops, did he not, Mr. Secretary?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the Secretary recognized many of the considerations which, including the congressional and public concern, would meet this decision. But he participated together with the other close advisors of the president in what was essentially a process of weighing all aspects of the problem and seeking to assist the president in making a judgment which, taking into account all of these considerations, represented from his point of view a judgment which best served the public interest of the United States and would help to bring about the withdrawal of U.S. forces and our disengagement from Vietnam.
Well, now that the uproar in Congress and amongst the demonstrators has been larger than some officials anticipated, at least, do you think that this will have the effect of making the administration more sympathetic and more sensitive to the viewpoint of critics, and that perhaps more consideration will be given to this viewpoint in future military decisions?
Well, I certainly think that it will have had the effect of encouraging measures and opportunities for communication. I think, on the other hand, that it would be difficult to say that it can have the effect or will have the effect of leading the president as commander-in-chief to follow a different course. He naturally must consider all aspects of the situation, including the views of dissenters, and yet he still must make and carry out the decisions that he believes are best calculated to further the objectives which he has stated and which he says he shares with the dissenters themselves.
Part of the problem here at home, Mr. Secretary, seems to be that many of the young anti-war protesters no longer believe any of the official explanations or justifications, and they continue to believe that somehow Mr. Nixon, regardless of what he says, wants to keep us in Vietnam because he's a hawk. Now, how can you meet that kind of problem?
Well, of course, the president met that head-on in his press conference. I don't think he could have been clearer on that point. Beyond that, I think the most effective thing we can do is to begin the withdrawal of U.S. forces from the Cambodian sanctuaries in accordance with the timetable he announced. I can understand, I'm sure he understands the concern that we will get deeper and deeper. The only way to answer that definitively is to prove by our actions that we are not getting deeper and deeper.
Excuse me, Mr. Secretary. We'll be back in just a moment with more issues.
There are times a man needs his own airline. Like when somebody else goofs and it ends up that you have to get a rush shipment to somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And like the man who needed to get earth-moving equipment from the Midwest to Labrador in a hurry. Or when you have plane loads of freight to ship on a regular basis and you want your own aerial pipeline. At times like these, call Universal Airlines, the world's largest all-air cargo fleet. Universal has planes that can carry 5 tons, 15 tons, 45 tons, Argosies, Electras, Super DC-8s. You can charter any one of them to go any place you want in the 50 states, or Canada, or Mexico. And every inch of that plane is yours, except the cockpit. When you need your own airline, call Universal and watch your troubles fly away.
Mr. Secretary, you said that you were a little surprised by the extent of the domestic reaction to the movement into Cambodia. Were you also surprised by the extent of the reaction overseas? I have in mind the foreign minister of our ally Great Britain being booed off the stage at his own university, Oxford, where he was once in charge of the Oxford Union. He couldn't talk. He couldn't get a word out. Was this something also beyond what you had expected?
Well, I don't think so. Putting aside that particular episode, in general, our friends and allies abroad have supported the president's decision and the course we are following.
Could you explain support? I haven't seen any evidence of support.
Well, there's been a public expression of support, for example, by Prime Minister Sato of Japan, by President Marcos, who has written the president in support of his decision. The Southeast Asian countries have, in general, communicated support to us. The government of the Netherlands, among others, in Europe. And in general, they are simply anxious to be certain that the course we followed does have the military results predicted for it and that we do follow through on the basis of the withdrawal of U.S. forces from the Cambodian occupied areas within the timetable that the president announced. In other words, they share concern that lest we be more deeply involved. But insofar as these steps are concerned, they have in general indicated.
Have you had a single statement of actual positive support from any member of the NATO alliance in Europe?
Yes. I said the Netherlands has explicitly
approving what was done?
Yes.
Specifically approving it, but not from anyone else?
No, but we've had some. I wouldn't say that we had had expressions of disapproval. We have had, in effect, expressions of confidence that the president's decision was a decision which, having taken into account all the relevant considerations, would prove to have been successful.
Mr. Secretary, let's examine the reaction on the communist side. It's been widely predicted that the communist side will not sit back and take the losses that seem to be inevitable in the Cambodian operation, that somehow it will retaliate. As you know, a Sihanouk government in exile has already been proclaimed for Cambodia with Chinese communist support. What are the prospects, in your view, that this will lead to sending Chinese technicians and or troops into Laos and eventually into Cambodia?
Well, I can only say on that score that the intelligence estimates that were very carefully considered in the process of reaching this decision took this possibility into account. I don't think I could exclude it as a possibility, but nonetheless, it was a possibility considered sufficiently remote so that looking at the situation on balance, it was concluded that this was an acceptable risk.
What is the reaction in Moscow? We know what they have said publicly, that they've denounced this as another expansion of the war by so-called American imperialism. Do you foresee some move on their part to take more direct action, perhaps increase supplies for North Vietnam?
Well, I think we should note the fact that the Soviet Union has maintained a rather restrained posture, notwithstanding the strong language used by Premier Kosygin in his own press conference. They have not yet formally taken any step to recognize the Sihanouk government in exile. Soviet Union is co-chairman under the Geneva Accords, and as such undoubtedly is concerned with what could be done to restore the Geneva Accords. And while Ambassador Malik's statement of Soviet interest in a possible conference on Indochina has subsequently been undercut by official Soviet statements, I think it's important to note that even their subsequent statements leave open the possibility that they would regard a conference at some future time as having constructive value.
Well, doesn't it seem more remote than ever, Mr. Secretary, looking at it objectively?
A conference?
Yes, in which the Soviets would participate.
Well, I think it's a little early to make such a prediction. I think that they would be unlikely to want to support such an initiative while these cross-border operations are still underway. We hope that the initiative of the Southeast Asian countries due to meet shortly in Jakarta will help to develop momentum for an international solution, and that perhaps that conference will serve as a stimulus to a wider conference. Certainly the United States, at any rate, would welcome the consideration of the entire subject of the restoration of peace in Indochina at an international forum.
Mr. Secretary, in the President's televised news conference the other night, he said that if the United States were to withdraw its forces from Southeast Asia, as the protesters are demanding, America would be finished insofar as the peacekeeper in the Asian world is concerned. Would you explore a bit the extent to which we really are occupying a peacekeeper role in Asia? I would have thought that the peace of Asia was primarily endangered by friction between Russia and China, and that it was that very friction which in itself is the best guarantor of the peace of Asia, not anything we do.
Well, I think if you focus on the question of long-term stability in Southeast Asia, this has to be seen as an important factor in the preservation of a long-term balance in the area in which there is some kind of triangular relationship between the Soviet Union, People's Republic of China, and the United States. And so I think that the President's statement needs to be seen in its bearing on the opportunity to bring about a stable peace in Southeast Asia within the context of this larger triangle.
Mr. Secretary, communist forces in Cambodia apparently are continuing to move ahead in many areas in their effort to encircle Phnom Penh. If it reaches the point where they're about to encircle a capital, or indeed if the capital is about to fall to some kind of attack, do you think that we should do something to prevent this?
Well, you've asked the question very broadly in terms of doing something to prevent it. Of course, we are supplying small arms now to the government of Cambodia. In any case, the only categorical answer I can give you is that I do not foresee that we would involve U.S. combat forces to prevent this.
Would you favor the use of South Vietnamese troops in areas beyond the sanctuaries to prevent the Cambodian government from falling to the VC?
No, I would not. I think that the concern of both the United States forces and of our armed forces is the prevention of the development of a major logistical base for the North Vietnamese.
Well, in the meantime, Mr. Secretary, North Vietnamese and Pathet Lao forces in Laos are moving ahead. They've captured at least one other supply city recently. Now, the enemy has had the opportunity and the strength to take all of Laos almost any time it wanted to.
I'm sorry, John. I beg your pardon, Mr. Secretary. We'll be back in just a moment with more issues and answers.
Lift, steady, straighten, lower. Ready? Now print. That's what some people call high-speed copying, but not Bell & Howell. Our new high-volume Statesman copier makes copying easier and faster. Oh, sure, everybody says that, but we've actually done it. With the AutoLift exposure cover that raises and lowers automatically, so the operator can keep both hands free to copy more originals. And a single button starts the copier, selects paper size, makes the copies, and turns the machine off, all automatically. This is what you have to do with the other machine, which takes up a whole room. But not the Bell & Howell Statesman. It takes only 6 square feet. And as for book copying, we have a much better way. Like this, not this. So even though you originally got the copier you wanted, do you still want the copier you got?
Working your way to the top can be fatal. Ask anyone who's ever made it to the top of the FBI's most wanted list, if you can.
They're trying to kill me!
Hold it, FBI!
One to all units. Intercept!
Today, the enemy is a desperate killer run to earth. Tomorrow, the best brains of the international underworld will strike. The man who picks up that briefcase is the one I want killed. And the men of the FBI will counterstrike.
If they find out about you, it's only one more step to me.
FBI, Wilson, hold it right there.
These are their stories. The agents of the FBI, the working men of the greatest crime-fighting organization in the world.
Mr. Secretary, before we were interrupted, I was about to ask, what happens if the communist side moves ahead to take over all of Laos, as they seem military capable of doing? Won't this outweigh whatever advantages we will gain by our cleanup operations in the Cambodian sanctuaries?
No, I don't think so. It should be clear, of course, and I'm sure it is clear to you, that if they were to do this, they would be acting in total and blatant violation of the Geneva Accords. It would have very serious international consequences for them. In any event, I think it's important to emphasize that even by present estimates, the Pentagon indicates that the total volume of enemy ammunition supplies seized so far in the Cambodian operations exceeds the total amount of enemy ammunition expended for the entire preceding year in Vietnam. It's about the same amount that they would have spent during the last 10 months. That is, the total amount exceeds all captures for the preceding year, and about the amount that they use in a 10-month period. And so this is going to be difficult for them to offset by any Laotian operation, so far as the effect on our program of Vietnamization and withdrawal is concerned.
Mr. Secretary, before we get off of Vietnam, I wanted to ask you one other question. Do you think that hardline comments by top administration spokesmen against the militant radical element of the anti-war movement are necessary in order to build up the broad base of public support for President Nixon's overall Vietnam policy?
No, I don't think so. And I don't think that any statements that have been made that express dismay over the kinds of militant actions that result in seizure of buildings and the destruction of property should be interpreted in the context of protest or dissent on the Vietnam War itself.
Mr. Secretary, shortly before the Cambodian War suddenly took our movement into Cambodia took the attention from everything else, we learned that the Russians have put their own pilots into military operations in Egypt, which was quite a new departure in that part of the world. My question is in two parts. Has the Cambodian venture distracted our attention from it? Has it held up unduly and dangerously a decision on giving the Israelis permission to buy the planes they want? And B, when will there be action on this matter?
No, it has not in any way prevented the intensive review and consideration of this entire problem within the government. This is a matter of concern. Ambassador Beam met the other day with a deputy foreign minister of the Soviet Union seeking clarification of Soviet intentions. It's fair to say that he received no clear-cut answer. Meanwhile, intensive analysis of the whole situation by our intelligence community is underway, and we in the Department of State and others in the White House and in the Pentagon are reviewing all the possible courses of action open to us, including the question of some further steps in response to the pending Israeli requests.
Well, hasn't this now tipped the scales in favor of a decision to give to sell to Israel the Phantom fighters and the fighter bombers that they want?
Certainly is a factor on that side of the scales. On the other hand, I think we also need to consider measures that could induce an element of restraint in the situation and which could hopefully lead to a formal and publicly acknowledged ceasefire.
Was our hesitation about granting permission to buy those Phantoms before a deliberate act of restraint, and did the Russians, in your opinion, take advantage of that act of restraint?
It was an act of restraint. I think it would be premature to say that they took advantage of it, since their actions, beginning with the deployment of SAM-3 anti-aircraft missiles in the UAR, can be seen in the context of the earlier Israeli deep penetration raids into the UAR, and these subsequent moves involving aircraft may well be a part of the decisions taken at going back to the period of late December and early January.
But it is a rather dangerous escalation of the Soviet military involvement, is it not, Mr. Secretary?
It's a potentially dangerous situation, certainly, insofar as there is the risk of actual contact, combat between Israeli and Soviet planes, and particularly insofar as there is possibility of the use of Soviet planes over the canal area itself. And so we do have important reason to try to assure that restraint on both sides is observed.
Mr. Secretary, we wish to thank you very much for being with us today on Issues and Answers.
Thank you. Thank you.
Next week at this same time, the American Broadcasting Company will bring you another program of Issues and Answers. We hope you'll be with us.